Welcome to the Better Board series. I'm Pamela Groh of SimpleDevelopmentSystems.com, and I'm honored today to bring you someone who really hardly needs an introduction to the nonprofit world, Kivi LaRue Miller. Kivi is president of NonprofitMarketingGuide.com. She's also the author of the Nonprofit Marketing Guide, High Impact, Low Cost Ways to Build Support for Your Good Cause, and Content Marketing for Nonprofits, a Communication Map for Engaging Your Community, Becoming a Favorite Cause, and Raising More Money. And that's her brand new book. Through her training, coaching, and consulting, Kivi helps small nonprofits and small communications departments at larger organizations make a big impression with smart, savvy marketing and communications. And her webinars, her weekly webinar series, are just awesome. She writes the top-ranked blog on nonprofit communications at nonprofitmarketingguide.com. We're going to be talking with Kivi today about how you can help your board members share those stories that are so critical to your organization with the public in a way that is kind of, you know, more natural and enthusiastic. So welcome, Kivi.
And Thanks, Pam.
Thank you for joining us here today. I'm wondering if you could start maybe by describing for me your first experience with a board.
Well, you know, this is interesting. I've served on a lot of boards. I think I've served in every board position, president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and a lot of other little jobs on boards. And if I'm remembering this right, my first board experience was on the board of the California Resource Recovery Association, which is sort of the professional recycling community within the state of California. And I was the only woman on the board for this sort of crew that had just been elected to this association. And there were three or four pretty big egos who were all vying for the board presidency. And the rest of the board members decided to make me the youngest and the only woman on the board president, so they didn't have to contend with all of the egos. So, you know, I think I was maybe 23 or 24 at this point, and became the chair of this large state association.
Wow. So how did that work out with the egos?
You know, I think I did a pretty good job managing the board meetings themselves. But, you know, I was not ready to be the spokesperson for a state association, especially one as big as this. And so I don't think that went very well, frankly. But I did learn a lot very quickly about how you manage boards and how you work with different board members who have different reasons for being on a board.
That is really interesting. And It's reassuring to know that everyone starts out somewhere.
Yeah. You know, that's not how I would recommend you start out, but, you know, life happens sometimes and you learn what you can from those experiences.
Can you talk to us a little bit about how some of your favorite strategies for helping board members in the storytelling aspect?
I think the most important thing about getting your board to help you with marketing and fundraising is to understand that each person is an individual and they are all going to bring different experiences, different skills, different desires for ways to help to the board. I don't think you can do a one-size-fits-all approach. So I like to suggest a couple of different things that are fairly easy for most people to do and let the board members decide for themselves which thing they want to do and that they believe they're going to be successful at, because there's nothing worse than board members who agree to do something and then don't do it. And we see that all the time. And so I think we should really accept that that's going to happen and let them choose.
That's so interesting. Do you think it happens more when you do approach it more from the perspective of the board as this entity rather than boards, individual board members? Do you think that's part of the problem?
I do think it's part of the problem. And then I also just think that we in the nonprofit world are still trying to figure out how to be good communicators and good marketers. And so when then you're trying to train your board to do that. If you yourself are not confident in your own messaging, it's really hard to get somebody else to do a good job with it too. That's one of the reasons why I'm not a fan of asking boards to memorize an elevator pitch, for example. I think that's a recipe for disaster in most situations.
That's interesting. I've always felt that way too, but I quite honestly, it was more of an intuitive thing with me. I just didn't like it. So tell us what the alternative is.
Well, okay, so let's sort of compare and contrast. If you're asking someone to memorize an elevator statement, you're already putting them in panic mode because they have to memorize something, and most people are not good at memorizing things. Then they're usually loaded down with statistics, which again are very hard to remember, and it sends people in this sort of state of panic, like, I can't remember this, I'm going to flub it, I'm going to get it wrong, oh no, I'd rather just not speak. And so you end up getting people who would be good advocates for your cause if they were allowed to speak naturally, keeping their mouths shut. So the opposite of that is letting them speak naturally and from the heart and in words that they choose themselves that feel very comfortable to them. And so there are a couple of different ways that you can work with your board members to get them to do that. The first thing I like to do is to just have a casual conversation about what's special about the organization. That's the question. What's so special about us as this nonprofit? And just have a very free-flowing conversation about that.
I'm sorry, I'm just listening. Are you still there?
Yeah, I am.
No, I was just thinking about one board member that I worked with, and I remembered sitting down with her and finding out, and this was an educational organization kind of similar to Teach for America.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out from our conversations that she had become engaged with the board because her own daughter had had some pretty serious issues when she was in high school and college. Some growing issues. And then she kind of stumbled across this organization, and she became a teacher in LA, and it changed her whole life. It turned her life around and gave her direction, and she ended up becoming a teacher. And that was why this particular board member was so drawn to the organization.
Well, and I think that's actually the second question that I like to ask people. So we talk about the organization, what makes the organization so special? And then I encourage people to talk about why they're there. Why do you come to every board meeting? Or why are you, you know, signing up for your third year of board service? What's in it for you personally? And so that's where you get at really good stories, like the one you just shared. And you'll start to hear some motivations that are very powerful for people that often have little to do with the actual mission of the organization. A story that I tell a lot is about a board I served on for 5 years called Positive Wellness Alliance, which is an organization that helps people with HIV and AIDS in the community that I live in. And, you know, a lot of people think, oh, well, you must be on that board because you know somebody that has the disease or that you work in healthcare. And yes, I know people who are living with HIV, but that's not my real motivation for having served on that board. It was because in our small town in the rural South, there's still a lot of stigma associated with this disease. And I felt like they were sort of the nonprofit underdog in our community. As a communications professional, I thought, okay, which nonprofit really needs my help the most? Who's really the underdog? And I heard some stories about how difficult it was for this organization to communicate because of the work they do, because they talk about things like educating teenagers about safe sex, which is still not a real open conversation in this part of the country. And so that's why I chose to be on the board, is because they were the underdog. It really had nothing to do ultimately with the disease. And you're not going to find those nuggets until you have these conversations with people.
And how do you recommend going about, and who has these conversations with the people, with the board members?
you know, it's a perfect conversation to do in kind of your standard board retreat. Mm-hmm. But I think you can also do them at board meetings. It's better if it's not just sort of sitting around the conference table in the conference room. It's better if it's a more casual conversation where things can be a little more free flowing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's no perfect way to do it. You just have to open the door to the conversation. And depending on the culture of your organization, you may need to encourage people to loosen up a little bit. But just simply ask them, you know, what's their personal motivation for being there and spending their time there?
I love that. And I love your story, which actually brought a tear to my eye.
Gosh. So you're finding out, you know, what makes the organization special, what's the personal motivation, and then the exercise to kind of bring it all together mm-hmm. is taking turns telling each other why you love the organization. And this is actually an exercise that I lifted from Gail Perry when she did it with a board that we both served on together. And you just get up and find someone to do this with, and you take literally 90 seconds to just explain to the other person, I love this organization because. And often the because will be sort of a combination of why the organization is special and why that person is personally motivated to be there. And what comes out of the mouth is always so much better than trying to get somebody to memorize a standard elevator pitch. It's so much more compelling, and it really opens the door to a broader conversation about the nonprofit and about serving with that nonprofit.
Exactly. Can I ask you, do you ever think the elevator pitch is a good idea?
I do. I mean, I think there's a purpose for it, but it's typically not the thing I would ask a board member to memorize. You know, there are people on your staff that should have it, who need to be able to recite that sort of material in a sort of a peer-to-peer setting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're talking to other professionals in the nonprofit world, or they're talking to a foundation grant maker. You know, in those situations, I think an elevator pitch can be a little more useful,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the kind of thing that your board member is going to spit out when they're on the golf course or at a cocktail party or, you know, in some other social situation, talking to other potential board members, talking to other potential donors, and really being an ambassador for your cause. It's a lot less likely that your board members are going to be in those sort of formal professional nonprofit situations.
So when do you know, how do you know when you need to use facts and figures and statistics as opposed to your stories?
I always tell people to start with the story. You have to capture people's imagination and attention before they're going to come anywhere close to processing numbers and statistics in a meaningful way. So always start with the story. And sometimes that's enough. You stop with the story. Now, you may have certain people who really like the facts and figures. You may have major donors in particular who are really seeing their philanthropy as an investment mm-hmm. and therefore are sort of more interested on that return on investment conversation. So you can move into more facts and figures later, but that's almost always further down the conversation. You always start with a story. And so in addition to getting your board members to talk about why the organization is special, what their personal connection is, I think staff can also share stories with board members that board members can repeat. It's even better if the board members can get that experience themselves and be able to relate a first person account. Mm-hmm. But the next best thing is to just have the staff do a lot of storytelling that the board can then repeat.
How do you recommend that happening? Having say your program staff at board meetings, in a retreat setting? How do you keep that going throughout the year so that you're getting new stories?
I think you definitely can incorporate it into the board meetings, but you know, really good storytelling should be a part of your overall communication strategy. So if you're communicating to people on your mailing list regularly, then hopefully your board is also seeing that and can pick up those stories as well. I like the idea of executive directors communicating in between board meetings, especially if you only meet quarterly. You've really got to do some communication in between. And so just a short little email with a quick anecdote, something that just happened last week, can be another good way to share those stories with your board members.
I've got an article to share with you. You just reminded me.
Okay, good.
Now,
great stuff.
Now we had talked before about, you were also going to talk about how board members could serve as listening teams.
Right. So I like this job for board members as well, is to just go out and listen to what's happening in the community. And so there are lots of different ways you can go about this. So let's take two examples. Maybe you're getting ready to start planning for an event. And so let's say the event's going to happen 6 months from now. You've got a little bit of lead time. So I would ask board members to go out and talk to their friends, people they already know, mm-hmm. about either why they came to the event last year, or did they have a good time? What was their favorite part? Or if they didn't go to the event last year, why? You know, was it just a bad date, or did it just not seem that fun to them? But to just kind of have a casual conversation with a few of their friends about why they came or why they didn't. And to bring that back to the next board meeting. Now, you don't have to make decisions solely based on this input. It's not like this is it and that's, you know, whatever is reported back in the board meeting goes. That's not the way it works. But it's another source of information for the staff to use. So let's take another example. Let's say, as you hopefully are doing at various times of the year, you're getting ready to write a direct mail appeal and you're curious about what angle to use, what story to use. You just haven't made that decision yet. You can share some of those with your board members and sort of have them test drive them for you in the community and see, have them report back, you know, did people's eyes light up when they told this story or when they sort of shared this angle? Or did people seem like they were just sort of politely listening? And again, report that back to staff at the next board meeting or via email or phone call, whatever works for your organization. And again, it's not like that input is going to be the sole criteria on which a decision is made, but it's, again, it's useful feedback that staff can use in making those decisions.
Oh, I love that. I've actually never heard that before. That whole strategy.
It's a really easy job that board members can do that's meaningful.
Exactly. It's sort of like, maybe not. I was thinking it's sort of like a marketer who kind of launches a product that has not even been created to kind of gauge the response.
Yeah, exactly. You're just
I
sort
love
of
that.
Testing ideas with people, or, you know, people love to be asked their advice.
God, yes.
So, you know, people love that. It's just it's a nice way to open the door to a conversation. Oh, we're thinking about moving the gala. We're thinking about changing the caterer. It can be something as simple as that. You know, it doesn't have to be sort of earth shaking.
Oh, and then everybody's got an opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, are there any, this has been awesome. Are there any other tips you might have?
Well, this is sort of a pet peeve of mine, but don't make your board members feel guilty. That's sort of the worst thing you can do with a board member, is to make them feel bad about their service on the board. So instead, what I would do is really work on figuring out how they can contribute and feel good about contributing. And we've talked about a number of different ideas today, and I know you're going to present lots of other ideas in interviews, but work with your board members one-on-one, especially the ones that you feel like are your bad board members, to figure out what it is that they can really do that they're going to feel good about and is going to be helpful to you.
Oh, I love that. And it's so true. You really want to empower them. You want to empower them.
Absolutely.
Are you familiar with Brené Brown?
I don't think so.
She did a TED Talk on the power of vulnerability that's just amazing. And I'm reading or actually listening to one of her books now, but she talks about how nothing has actually ever been accomplished through shame.
I love that. That's great.
And it's so true. It's so true. And trying to make somebody feel guilty is not the ticket.
Yeah. And I mean, I understand where that comes from as a nonprofit staff person. You see your board as these people that are supposed to help you. And a lot of times they don't. And, you know, sometimes they're bad board members. Sometimes they need to get off the board. But I think more often than not, they aren't really bad board members. You just haven't worked with them to find the best way that they can contribute. And you do have to personalize that.
Exactly.
And so I encourage you to really learn from this series and find ways to let your board members help that are comfortable for them and helpful for you.
Well, this has been really fun and eye-opening, and I really appreciate you being here today.
Well, thanks, Pam. It's always my pleasure to chat with you.
I've learned so much, and I know that our listeners have too. Can you tell our listeners how to reach you, as if they don't know?
Well, you can find us at nonprofitmarketingguide.com, and on social media, on Twitter and everywhere else, I'm usually KiviLM.
Terrific. I am going to sign off now, and if you could stay on for 1 second.